Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I'm Nathan Hale and Paul Revere.
Oh, shit, honey.
I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means, of course, it's time for the Constitution Hour. I want to give everybody a welcome. I see we got Miss Yola in the chat room and FT, and I've got Robert online. I want to play one more song before I bring Mr. Robert up. So if you'll bear with me while I locate it. And I do have some good news to share with you guys this evening, aside from the fact that we're still living in the United States of America. We do have something else that I wanted to play. So if you'll bear with me, I'm trying to find it here, guys. Oh, boy, I'm not locating it. I did get to have the pleasure of meeting Robert this afternoon. We were actually able to go and have a cold beer together, and that was quite a pleasurable event. I wish I had more time that we could have spent together. Is it okay if I call in on your cell? Because this thing is there connection for my headset and everything? No? Okay. Well, guys, I'm not going to be able to do it from here. So I'm going to have to do it from here. So I'm going to get the keypad out and do it the old-fashioned way. We're going to call the very download. Oh, crying out loud. All right, guys, I'm going to hang.
Well, I don't know if that did any good or not. Did that get me in, Miss Yola? If somebody can give me a thumbs up if I've got audio, then we're in good shape. Awesome. Don't ask me how I managed to do that, but I called myself on the guest call-in line, and I'm on the wife's cell phone. So modern technology is awesome, at the very least. The good news I was talking about earlier, and you probably couldn't hear me because I'm sure that the signal was pretty poor, is I did get to have a nice visit with not only our own Robert Kaplan, but I also got to visit with our very own Frank Winkle. And Frank is doing quite well. In fact, he is ready to go home, and he will be lobbying his daughter to take him home tomorrow. So it wasn't that he was trying to avoid us. It was that his cell phone was at the house and it's dead. And he's not. So that's awesome. I'm going to try and put the phone down so that I don't have to hold it up. If my voice is faded out too much, just let me know and I'll pick it back up and hold it for the remainder of the show. But I'm going to set it down here.
So if our sound quality is good, I'll do the show like this. If not, I'll pick the doggone phone back up, and I'll hold it up to my ear the old-fashioned way. So that really was the biggest reason that I wanted to do a show tonight, was that I was able to see and visit with Mr. Frank, as well as Robert. I don't want to leave Robert out. He was very instrumental in getting me over to where Frank is staying. So
that was a tremendous help. And I did get to hang out with Robert at the bar, and we tossed back a couple of beers and even had a cigar. And hopefully that doesn't get him in any trouble with the missus.
And you'll have to forgive me. I'm trying to eat a steak in the midst of all this. I didn't end up getting any lunch today. But, you know, on my travels, going over to see Robert and Frank, had the occasion to listen to the radio. And we have Sirius satellite radio in the car, so I listened to the Patriot channel. And there was a lot of stuff going on yesterday and today, of course, in honor of our veterans. And some of the things that I heard being discussed really pissed me off. One of those was the idiot from MSNBC saying that he really has a difficult time using the terminology of hero with regards to our military servicemen and women, because in a rhetorical sense, it seems to be supporting more war. Well, that guy's an idiot. And it's pretty obvious that he's an idiot. But nonetheless, he gets a national audience, and I don't. So go figure. And I see we've got Miss Linda popping in. Guys, I'm going to try and refresh. I agree. I'm going to try and refresh the studio. This may totally screw the pooch. I hope not, because there's all kinds of crazy. Oh, man, there goes everybody. Now everybody's up and on. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to bring everybody up. There's Robert. I'm going to try and bring you up, Robert. Last time didn't work. There you are, Mr. Robert. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Ron. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Just finishing the last bite of my filet here. And kind of a hokey setup we've got going here on the Blog Talk studio, but it's okay. It works.
Well, yeah, I hear you look crystal clear. Can you hear my cell phone crystal clear without any static?
You know, this is one of the few times you've called in where it doesn't sound like you and Kathy are skydiving.
You're lucky you're still in Cape Coral. Ron, I'm only busting your chops.
I was going to say, it's not that far of a drive, Robert.
Oh, my Lord. So, Ron, I don't know about you, but I'm still kind of toasted for those beers we drank.
I'm fine, but I do drink the IPAs on a regular basis.
That's a sign of a true beer drinker.
Well, I told you, I'm kind of a beer snob, I guess, is what I've been called on more than one occasion. And
well,
don't really go in for the old Budweiser and that stuff. And I see my good friend Dean Shook is also in the chat room. Want to say hello to Dean. Go ahead, Robert.
I was going to mention what you said about the heroes. I mean, the heroes didn't ask for these wars.
Right.
They were told to. Go ahead.
Well, that's the thing, you know. They're heroes, not because of anything the government did, but because of their own action. And it's
sure.
Because they're willing to give their own life for the idea of something better, for the idea of liberty and the idea of freedom. That's what makes them heroes. Self-sacrifice.
That's why they don't want to stop the cause in Afghanistan, because they want to finish the job. It's not over for them. They feel in their minds that it's not over for them.
Well,
but of course, go ahead, Ron.
Well, the way I look at it, and you know, Dean's here in the chat room, and I think he would probably agree with me. I don't necessarily agree with our reasons for war, many of the wars that we've gone into, and many of them undeclared.
However, that does not diminish the self-sacrifice of all those men and women that have given up their time, and many of them the full measure, the ultimate sacrifice, their lives, fighting, and at least in their hearts believing that they were defending something bigger than themselves. And you know, it struck me. It really struck me as I'm driving down the road that the progressives, the liberal progressives, they're all about collectivism. They're all about the collective. Right up until the point that we come to our men and women in military, and the one time they should be supportive and should be endearing the collective, they disregard them. They try to bring it down to the individual soldier, and every one of those soldiers, every guy that's ever served, if you ask them, it's about your teammates. It's about everybody on the team. It's not just one guy.
Well, slaves be wrong, then Obama has the nerve to serve these guys that lost a limb, lost a leg, lost an arm, and he's depicting freedom, but then on the other hand, he's taking our freedom away from us. Those poor soldiers didn't ask for that. They knew when they were going to war, they were only fighting for one thing: freedom. Period. That's all they were fighting for, you know. And I just feel this president is like rejumping a battery in the car and then taking the battery out and making the car dead again. So you know, that's my take on the whole thing. I don't get CNBC.
Most of these damn presidents, whether it's Bush or Obama or Romney for that matter, coming up, they're like the old snake oil salesmen you used to see in the Westerns, you know? They're your best buddy, they're selling you a bill of goods, they're your best friend, and they're sticking it to you behind your back.
Exactly. You saw my garage, you saw the picture that I had on my dartboard, right? Did you see that?
I don't know if I did it. I think you might have missed it,
but I should have pointed it out to you. But on my in my garage door, I have a picture of Bush and Laura, his wife, and I have darts placed you know where. That's why you were quite, you weren't quite sure whether or not I was really a true good old, I'm not a good old boy, but at least I know what's right from wrong. That's the main gig, you know? Am I right or wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I've said it before, and it's no different than the military. When it comes to government, when it comes to freedom, it's not about me. It's not about the individual. This is one time when conservatives can come together and agree that it's the collective. It is the collective in that sense. My freedoms and my rights are the same as yours, Robert, and the same as Linda's and Dean's and Yola's. And I'm not fighting just for me. And neither are those boys over there on foreign soil fighting and dying just for themselves or for me or their family members. It's for all of us.
Exactly. And, you know, I just don't feel, since before the bubble hit, I don't feel all we are getting bombarded is the banks are stealing money away from us, and the government's stealing money away from us. And we're just sitting here trying to survive, you know? I got tired of figuring it out, Ron. I think we both figured it out, but, you know, what else can we do? I just want to know, what else can we do?
Well, you know,
It's exactly the ideology that Frank stated when we were talking to him this afternoon, and that was, you know, if we weren't supposed to be sheared, we wouldn't have been made sheep.
Right. I agree. Frank still has his marbles. He's not done yet. You know? He's doing okay.
I know.
He's just fine. You know he's gonna make it, so he's gotta do a lot of rehab. That's all he has to do. He's gotta rehab his right side of his body.
Yep. And he set himself a short-term goal with the national convention. He set himself a short-term goal, so I think that's a very positive thing.
I mean, he's got to just, you know, just keep his chin up, and I don't think he, the way Holly was talking, when I talked to Holly last, jeez, hold on one second.
Frank is Frank. He's ornery as ever. He's still not using his right side very well at all. His hand, he can't use at all.
Yeah,
but
I know.
He did say he was able to walk with the aid of a cane or using the chair rail. So he has been up walking, and he's able to use his right leg some, which is a positive thing. And as Robert said, Frank is very determined. And, yes, Linda, you're absolutely correct. And he's still quite smitten with Miss Linda Sills, I have to tell you.
Yes.
He said she's absolutely gorgeous.
Is Frank on the line? Is he listening, you know?
No. Well, I don't know. He could be listening. But it is what it is. And poor Linda's blushing.
She's blushing?
You know, I got to tell you, Robert, can you think of a more formidable team than Linda and Frank?
Well, I haven't seen Linda in person, but with her,
I'm talking about politically.
I'm talking about
lighting a fire under somebody's backside on the issues. The two of them would be like, you know, Butch and Sundance.
No, well, I think Linda and Frank would make a pretty good match.
I think they would make a great match.
I want to get
a message to my buddy Dean Shook, who's in the chat room, and I did get your email the other day, Dean, and I apologize. I've been kind of under the radar lately. I've had so much on my plate trying to study and read, and quite honestly, I've been so inspired with the reading the Jewish Wars from Josephus Flavius. It's reignited the passion in me for the preterist view, and I'm working very diligently to try and get a gentleman to come on my radio program within the next week or two, who has got some tremendous write-ups and Bible study concerning the prophecy fulfillment in 70 AD that I think you might find very interesting. And when I get the chance, probably when I get back home next week, I'll forward you the file, and it's a PDF file, but it makes some very good reading. So what do you got going on, Robert? You still recovering?
We just drove in, and I'm getting ready to put Kathy in the house and Leonie in the house, and we're going to sit down and have a little late dinner. I just wanted to say it was a pleasure meeting you. And I'm sorry, again, I apologize for not, won't be able to attend Indiana, but I can't control that. And there's nothing I can do about it because that's exam week, and there's nothing I can do. But at any rate,
We understand. I was going to say we understand. We don't necessarily like it, but we understand that. I think everyone wanted an opportunity to meet Robert. Okay. I will be your advocate and representative at the family reunion.
I appreciate that, and like I said before, I just want to say I'm glad we got to see Frank together. That was a treat.
Absolutely, and it was the feeling is absolutely mutual on my part. I was very glad and honored to meet you. You should be a bit of a celebrity there in Venice.
Well, I try not to be. I try to keep a low profile and as much as I can, but you know how hard that is in this damn town.
Well, I think it's awesome that you. I think it's great that you've got some real heritage there.
Well, it's basically, Ron, to sum it up. All I did all my life since my father was in this town. Where is it? All right. All I did since I've been in this town, all I did for nothing was community service. So I think I paid my dues, you know?
Well, you know, that's a big set of shoes to try and fill with your father and his legacy that he left.
Well, it's true. It's, you know, and right now, I mean, biostatistics is all I have left. So, you know, that's, I mean, and believe me, this is an important job. And if I can get through the second round of biostatistics, let me tell you, I'm on my way, you know, to keep on the tradition of my family. And I still have my skills, you know. I still have my nursing skills and everything else. So it's just a matter of time. Now, all we got is time left now, Ron. So, but my point is to everybody: we got time to solve this problem, and we need to solve it quick. But we need to get these guys. Like, you know, everybody says we can't vote them out, but we sure can get in their faces and tell like it is. I don't know what else I can tell you, but I just hope to God we still have our freedom. If we don't have our freedom, we might as well call it the day. You know, that's how I feel.
I can understand that. That's how the Jews felt in Madassa also, or Madrasa.
Oh yeah, it's awful. It's just an awful.
They killed themselves. Each man, in turn, killed his entire family, and then they had a group of men that killed them, and then they committed suicide. The last guy committed suicide.
That's terrible. I'll tell you a quick story before I go, and I'll let Linda come in because I got to get back to work. But I saw a lady at the grocery store. She goes, "You don't remember me?" And I said to her, I knew who she was, so I started playing with her. I said, "No, I don't remember you." She goes, "You mean in her Spanish accent?" She goes, "You really mean you really don't remember me?" And I told her in Spanish, "Yo tengo muy malo recuerdo," which means I have a very bad memory. When I said that to her in Spanish, she really got upset. She really thought I had a bad memory. "You don't know?" She goes, "You don't know who I am?" I said, "I know who you are. I'm just playing with you." So she goes, "But the point I'm trying to make, her husband works for FEMA, right? He used to sell insurance. He used to sell insurance. So I said to her, are you waiting for your husband to round you up to put you in the camps? And when I said that to her, Ron, she did the same thing. She laughed. She was laughing. She goes, oh, Rob Ransom, you're too funny. You're too funny. I said, I'm not too funny. That's what's going to happen. Your husband's going to take you, too. Right?
There you go. Yeah, you never know.
No, you never know. That's the whole point. You just don't know. So, Sir Ron, again, I just want to say thank you very much for the time. It's 8:10, and I had to go back to work since you had 3 beers and I only had 2.
Well, you get back to work and cook dinner for those 2 lovely ladies, and I'm sorry that we didn't have more time to hang out and spend some time together.
Exactly, and if you still want to have some free time, you're between the now and the end of the week, you're more than welcome to hang here. All right.
All right, sir. Thank you, Robert. It was a pleasure.
A pleasure meeting you. Take care. Tell everybody I said hey.
All right, sir. God bless.
Take care, bye. Bye, bye. You too.
And that was Mr. Robert Kaplan. And Robert is from Venice, Florida. And I had the pleasure of driving up and meeting Robert this afternoon. And we got to go hang out and have a couple of beers together. And that was quite a pleasure. And Robert knew where Frank was staying. So I said, well, what are we doing sitting here? Let's go see Frank. So that's exactly what we did. And I'm going to attempt to bring Linda on. And I say attempt because this internet setup is running really, really slow, and I may actually have to hit refresh on the studio here and see if I can get her in. I hope so, without killing the whole thing. That may have been a mistake. See, this is why I had to get a new computer, because my old computer is so slow. And there's Miss Linda. How are you, Miss Linda?
Fine, sir. How are you?
I've had a very good day, actually. Thank you very
awesome.
Much.
That sounds like you got to hang out with 2 wonderful people, and you got to see Frank. I'm so happy that he's doing a little better, and we know it's going to take time. So, yeah, it was nice to hear Robert on the air today, and he's just rambunctious as ever.
Right. I did get to hang out with a couple of wonderful people, and Robert and Frank were there also.
You're too much. Anyway, absolutely. I never, Frank is such a great person. As I've said before, we never really got to have a date, so, you know, I don't know. But we would make a good team. He could teach me about finances, and I could teach him how to stand up in front of a city council and just raise hell.
Well, his mind is sharp as a whip.
I know. He's.
I didn't get the chance to tell him. He kept telling me he's lost some gray matter, and I was going to tell him it appears that the only gray matter he lost was the liberal portion, whatever little bit there was.
Oh,
so he's
Lord.
No worse for the wear.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad that you got a chance to see both of those people. I mean, that's just great.
I was thrilled. I'll tell you, he certainly wasn't expecting to see me come walking in.
Oh, wow. Did he flip out?
He did. You know, I came, we walked in the front door, and a guy came through one of the, I don't know if he's an orderly or a nurse there or what, but he came through and Robert said, we're here to see Frank Winkle, and he knew who he was. He says, oh, yeah, he's the first door right around the corner. And Frank said, I'm right here. And I looked up, and he said, what are you doing here?
Oh, that's got to be hysterical. You guys must have had a great time. Oh, my gosh.
So he had no clue that we were coming.
whatsoever. Oh, that's amazing.
It was pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I don't know if I'm sure Bill mentioned to you last time you were on the chat about that we did an impromptu show filling in for Michael Magic, because Bill says he says I want to go on the air because he says I got some things to talk about. So we did it for an hour and a half. We talked about Agenda 21 and the UN and all these treaties and everything else. And I mean, we were on fire because I had gotten so much in my email boxes about Agenda 21 and what they're trying to do to us. And especially right here in Oceanside, I'm livid. I'm still putting together a speech. And I'm rounding up the troops. I'm hoping I get 20 people in that rotunda on June 6th, man. So what I'm going to do is go and reschedule the show to make it 6 p.m. Eastern for an hour instead, because I got to bail out and get down there and sign in so I can speak. And, boy, am I going to speak.
Frank is a Ron Paul delegate for Sarasota.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So he said he's going to the convention come hell or high water.
He will. He's determined. If he's half in and half out of a casket, he'll go. I know him. You can't keep that one down.
Absolutely. So. And I told him I'm working with a friend of mine. I'm trying to see what it will take to get some press credentials to go down and cover the convention.
Yep. Awesome. Wow. I know. And now, do you know the date in August that's supposed to happen?
I believe it's in June.
Ah.
I would look it up on my computer, but it'll overload things at this point.
Yeah. Big convention in August or no?
You know, it may be. I thought it was in June.
Okay. Well, we're having our June primary on the 5th, which is Tuesday, whatever, not tomorrow, but a week from. And then I believe it's August 15th, our Anti-Agenda 21 Task Force, apparently we're going to try to gather and make some noise because we have good old Jerry Brown signed into law, cap and trade for California. So they're going to have their first carbon credit auction. I'm just beside myself. We're going to try to shout it down. We'll probably get arrested, but we'll see. Who knows? Oh, Lord.
Well, did you see the...
Goodbye.
Oh, no. Yeah, see, that just killed it. I don't know what happened there.
Did you lose your studio?
I lost everything. That's okay. Uh-oh. We're still on. And I should be able to recover, I think, without too much difficulty. See, you and I are still connected, so it's still there in the background.
And are they hearing us?
They should be, yeah. I was trying to type in the chat room to see if Yola or anyone knew the date for the GOP convention.
Right.
Probably what's going to happen, I'm going to try and log back in, and what will probably end up happening is we'll get kicked.
Okay.
So
I can always
call
back.
This whole setup stinks, but it's all I got to work with, so. I'm just glad to have internet.
Oh, I didn't have it for a day and a half, and it cost me $150 to get some stupid virus taken out of my computer today.
Yeah, mine's still thinking about bringing up Blog Talk. Good, I'm still logged in, so I don't have to go back. All I can do is restart the chat, and we're all in good shape.
Yeah,
so
there's so much going on in California, and I know that you know, on the national level too, and I'm sure that in Indiana, that's why Bill was so fired up the other day, and I don't blame him. We don't stop this stuff. It's over. You know, they are going to do what they want to do, and we're going to be little sheeple herded off to those FEMA camps Robert was talking about. It ain't going to happen. I ain't going to no gulag.
Well, you know, I was reading an article the other day. There's a bill on the House floor right now to turn over to the United Nations control of internet.
Oh, I saw that one too.
I'm like, you got to be flipping kidding me. And you know, on the way.
Yeah.
On the way down here. On the way down here, they had the best of Sean Hannity on the Patriot Channel, and I got tired of listening to him, so I turned over to a station that's called POTUS.
Right.
And Yola's informing us it's August 27th through the 29th. So
okay.
I don't know what the heck I was thinking of June, but that's even better.
Yeah.
But on the POTUS channel was a congressional committee hearing with Hillary.
Oh, God.
And there was a couple of senators that were really quizzing her over the lost treaty.
Yeah, another one.
And she was trying to tell them that really there was nothing in that gives up one scintilla of U.S. sovereignty. Which was a joke, because the guy's reading the language. He said, now, I was a trial lawyer, you know, for 15 years, so the language in this seems pretty clear when it says all signatories to the treaty shall, that means must. Because when you talk about the law, shall means you have to. There's no choice.
Right.
Abide by the findings of the governing body, the bureaucratic crap that's going to be put in place to oversee this Law of the Sea Treaty.
Oh, my God.
And any fines, you know, and if you go back to, if you read that in conjunction with that damn constitution that they wrote for Agenda 21, it's so clear and obvious, as they state quite plainly in that, it doesn't matter if there's scientific proof or not. In fact, even if it's proven that it's not scientific, all that's required claim to be made, all they have to do is claim that you've caused some damage and you're done. There's nothing you can do to defend it.
It's insanity. I mean, this is the whole point. It is not about the environment. It is not about global warming. This is the big, you know, back in the day, I might put this in my speech. When Joseph Goebbels aligned with Hitler and put the propaganda out that it was all the Jews and the bankers' fault and the Bolsheviks, if you think that was a whopper, this one coming down the pike, it's the biggest of all time. Hello? It's all the biggest huge lie on the planet of all time.
Since the time of Christ, the Jews have always been the scapegoat, so to speak.
Sure.
And Brian, to answer your question, Frank is doing great and hopefully going to be going home tomorrow.
Oh, praise God.
He said Holly's coming up tomorrow, and he is going to be campaigning very vigorously for her to take him home.
Poor thing. I feel so bad. I can't imagine. He's probably going out of his gourd. Yeah.
Well, he is, and he's surrounded by, you know, liberal gelatin.
Oh, God. They're going to give him another stroke. Oh, jeez.
He's got a few converts in there. There's like a little crowd that hangs together out there. They're like the last bastion, you know. I couldn't help thinking, and now that I reflect on it a little bit, even more so, that reminds me of that movie, The 300. You know, only there's like three. They got their wheelchairs back together with their shields up,
and the arrows are coming at them. I know.
they're fighting them off.
That's what we feel like out here too. I mean, that's how I feel, and I know that many patriots feel the same way. It's like we feel like we're, you know, fighting a losing battle, although I know that's not true. There's so much going on. I was listening to one of the stations that has people doing reading from the Bible here in San Diego. It's a local station for Christian ministries or whatever, and he was pointing to 2 Corinthians 4, 7 through 18, I think it was. It was really cool because it reinforces that these trials that we go through is to strengthen us, and that through all things, all things are possible with Christ. I mean, I'm going to have to read that one on my show next time, but yeah, it was quite inspiring that don't worry, you know.
There is no doubt in my mind, you know, I've known a lot of people, and growing up, I didn't have the Ozzie and Harriet childhood, and I've got siblings on my that were married in, you know, they're still blaming everybody but themselves for their lot in life. And it was quite a while ago that I realized that all the different trials and tests that I've been put through have made me who I am.
Yes.
I wouldn't be the man I am today if it were not for each and every one of those tests and trials. I thank God for it.
You know how kind of making the, you know, the correlation between how a lump of coal through heat and pressure becomes a gem, a diamond, and that's what God does to us. He puts that pressure on you, and he puts a little heat, and you then become the gem he wants you to be, if you'll allow him to do so, and not scream and moan and cry and wail, you know, murmur all the time. Which we, you know, as we go through Christ, then we learn not to do that as best we can. So we just have
trial
to know
by fire.
We just have to, we have to know his promises and believe upon him. And I think we're going to get through it. But I will tell you, they come for me for a FEMA camp. No. I am not going to be Solzhenitsyn Part 2 and writing my memoirs from some stupid camp.
I'm with you there.
No, my 12-gauge will be the last thing fired, and then, you know, that's it. That's the biggest weapon I got.
I wish I had more time and a better setup, because I really have a lot of conversation that I wanted to have with Dean, and I'd love to call in his show, but I tell you, with the setup I've got, it's horrid. And Skype is out of the question, I've learned, on my laptop here. That's just not going to happen.
Okay.
So, but, you know, I've got so much that I wanted to talk about with him. You know, as I was talking about my last show, when you look at the correlation between the Mosaic Covenant and the fact that we've got a generation 40 years that they wander the desert before they're delivered into the promised land, and you have the fulfillment of that covenant, and then the coming of Christ, which is the promised, it's the promise all the way through from the very beginning,
right,
that you're going to have a sacrifice, a lamb, and that's demonstrated in Genesis in the garden when God gives Adam and Eve the skins. That was the first animal sacrifice. God sacrificed a lamb to give them a covering to hide their nakedness. And so you look at that 40-year generation of fulfillment, kind of like a cooling off period. And I think that just goes hand in glove with the 70 AD, 40 years or generation after the crucifixion of Christ, for the fulfillment, the end judgment against Israel, and now we have where we're at today.
Yep, I know, and I do believe that people are waking up, but hopefully they're waking up in their hearts through Christ, because if you don't have a spiritual awakening, you know, we're going to be the sheeple, and it's not right, and because so many have rejected God, and he's not a happy camper right now. So we better be on our knees and be on his side, or those little miracles we're looking for in the next few months and couple years, you know, he's not going to comply with us until we start complying with him real quick. Like Robert said, we got to do it quick.
You know, one of the things that I'm kind of working with right now is trying to figure out if they, the all, the ever ubiquitous they, the powers that be, the power deletes. I'm curious if they know that the second coming, you know, if they know that's occurred, and they're trying to fool everyone, or if they honestly believe that they're bringing about something that hasn't happened yet, and we know who they follow. They follow Lucifer.
Right. Right.
And so they believe that Lucifer wins. And I'm just wondering, you know, if you think about it, if you honestly stop and think about it for a minute, from the preterist viewpoint, he's dead and gone. He's in eternal hell. He's not getting out. And they're still fighting, trying to win his war for him that they think is coming that ain't going to be.
Well, you know what? Whether it's the futurist or the preterist, either way, they're going to lose. You know, according to Scripture, it's done. You know, I mean, even Satan knows that because he's smarter than they are.
Well, sure, but I mean, you know, that doesn't keep him from fighting and trying. You know, he's always going to hold out hope that, well, maybe he'll slip up. I know that's not going to happen, but you know, nonetheless. So, just another interesting twist or take on things.
Sure.
And I'm still reading through this book, and I got to tell you, you know, I thought, okay, once we get to the destruction of Jerusalem, that's it. That's the end. It's not it. It's not the end. I've read about numerous towns. You know, the Jews that were able to flee Jerusalem and Judea and Galilee and all these other towns, they kept fleeing from town to town.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up in Masada, which is the Greek town, and the Greeks turned on them and slaughtered
right.
them. I mean, everybody was turning against them. Even in communities where they didn't flee, they'd been living there for generations, and people there knew them and accepted them as friends. You know, Antiochus went out and started a fracas against them and turned all the people against them, and they were getting slaughtered wholesale everywhere they went.
Unbelievable.
You know, so, I mean, I'm telling you, it was a bad time to be of Jewish heritage. On the face
yep.
of the planet, because they were being persecuted to the ends of the earth, literally.
Yeah.
I think we've got Brian on right now.
Okay.
What's up, Brian?
Hey, Bud, how's it going down there?
Hey, Brian.
It's going well. No severe sunburn yet.
Yeah, no heat stroke or nothing fun like that?
No, nothing crazy.
You haven't lived yet until you've had that once or twice. Jeez.
So what's your good news?
So, remember, I don't know if you're going to remember this or not, but remember we were back when I started the show, you know, doing the real estate, or the whole foreclosure thing,
yeah,
and
right.
blah, 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 and we had a discussion about the one set in the mortgages that had to do with the value of property being deemed for the goods, or it was like the goods, I forgot, I think they call it goods in consideration or something like that for the value of $10.
I can tell you exactly what it is. It's good advice. It's $20 and other good consideration.
Right. So as I've been going through just randomly, I don't know why this... most stuff happens or smacks me in the eye or just comes to me when I'm sleeping for some stinking reason. But so in the middle of the night the other day, after practice, I did the radio, my Friday thing, and got up Saturday morning during the night anyway. I was just randomly thinking about, you know, that whole statement and situation.
Right.
So looking at some of the audits that I went through and the mortgages, and I went through them with a fine-tooth comb. So apparently in a bunch of these mortgages, or some of these mortgages they've done and recorded, they can't go back and repair because they've been recorded as a supposed true fact and statement, you know, for the property
right.
description amount owed and so on. They did not put that in the mortgage.
Now, the only time I've ever seen it, and to clarify for those listening that don't know what we're talking about, on a title deed for property, down at the bottom of the title deed, it will say that the aforementioned property is being conveyed for $20 and other good and valuable consideration. Now, one of the theories is that the reason they say $20 and other considerations is because of our constitutional amendments, and I forget if it's the Seventh Amendment, I should know it, forgive me for not having it at my fingertips, but it says in suits at common law where the value shall exceed $20, the right to a trial by jury is preserved. And all these mortgage things are going before judge. It's all administrative. Not once have I ever heard of a jury trial over a foreclosure.
Right. Well, not yet you haven't. But
exactly.
Well, right, because the other day as I was going through a small handful of the mortgages that I have done, I found a couple that do not have that stated in them.
Wow.
So one of my partners that happens to be a real hardcore, actually one of the only four federal attorneys in the continental United States that are taking banks to court on a federal level for RICO statute violations and RESPA and TILA and all these other, you know, major violations that I've done, and got some opinions from him, and I called one of my clients that I'd been talking with that's finally found an attorney, and I explained to their attorney about, you know, I brought up the whole fact of the $20 in goods consideration issue. So they are in California, and they're going to be filing because you only have 2 points to file for to apply to a judge or file, apparently, to have a jury trial or a trial by jury in suing somebody. So
correct.
He was floored. They were really shocked that they didn't even think of that or catch that. So when I called up, hey, ta-da, guess what? Got a huge loophole because they didn't stick it in the mortgage, and it's not even in the refinance mortgages. You have a right to a jury trial, buddy. Guess what? Hello.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So
that'll be interesting.
Yes, so they may considerably be, taking the one of their Wells Fargo and stuff to and their cronies to bank by jury.
That is awesome. That is absolutely awesome. You're going to be hard pressed. I can hear the attorney for the bank now. Have you ever been late on your mortgage? Yes. Okay. Disqualified.
Wow.
Good luck with that in California, buddy.
Yeah. I'm not going to get financed anywhere too soon. That's for sure. I'm sure. But you know. But they're totally. I guess they have standing to file for a jury trial, and they're going to do it. They're going to shoot for it. So they're going to go apply for their case this week and get it all set up, and then hopefully keep me seriously posted on that, because that's huge.
Yeah, no kidding. That is enormous. That could blow this whole deal wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Right. I was like, you better. I hope to Moses and everything in between that you guys get it together, because man, that's almost like handing it, you know. I'm like, you know, really, going to jury trial over what a bank, over, I mean, that's going to be like, you really don't have to do a whole lot of work. I mean, they just show them the report and say a few statements and let the bank do the damage to themselves.
Yeah. I mean, truly, at that point, say, where did you get the money that you loaned this gentleman on his home? Where did you get the money from? Can you show us? Show me where the funds originated from. They can't show it. And if they try and explain it, you know, the jury's going to go to sleep saying, yeah, you guys are full of crap. You never loaned him anything. See you later. Game, set, and match.
Right. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yep. Right. And I told him, I said, basically, just it'll be real simple. As soon as you say, show me the note, and if they say, here's the note, then say, well, how come you're committing fraud on a federal – you're committing fraud because you have a note and a security existence at the same time. So, you know.
That's awesome. That is seriously huge.
That's good. So this will be one for California, and hopefully save, you know, starting a big gun.
I think you'll have people volunteering for jury duty.
Yeah, right. For the first time in history, people, there'll be a waiting line to get their $3 an hour to sit in jury duty.
Absolutely.
But anyway, I figured I'd let
guys
know. And
that is good news, Brian. That's absolutely killer. And, you know, I had to do the show today because being able to go down and see Frank, I just wanted to let everybody in the family know, you know, we got to see him. He's doing great. He's still got a long way to go, but he's going to fight like a devil. You know he will.
Oh, yeah,
And, you know, I also wanted to come on and just say, you know, it's Memorial Day. And we shouldn't just honor our troops one day a year, but every day, all the time.
Right.
And, you know, it's aggravating. I heard a couple of guys on the radio saying, Happy Memorial Day. And thank God there was one of the radio hosts said, you know, that really pisses me off. He said, you don't hear anybody saying, hey, happy 9/11 day.
Yeah. Was that Joe Pag this morning?
He said, we don't have a 9/11 sale.
Yeah. One of the guys on filling in for Glenn, Joe Pags, he was talking about it. And he was, he was pissed.
It really is true. And the sad thing is how we treat our veterans as a nation, or how our government treats them and how we allow them to be treated. And you go all the way back. You go all the way back to the Revolutionary War, and it was no different.
Exactly. Nothing's changed.
It was no different. In fact, I've got the CD set that my wife bought me for Christmas from Mike Church. And one of it is our founding fathers. There's a three-disc set.
Right.
You know, everyone should hear that because it is the run-up to the Constitutional Convention. And one of the reasons, or the only reason, in his mind at least, in looking at the history, the only reason that George Washington even agreed to attend the convention at all was a letter that was written to a newspaper from a veteran, from a veteran of the Revolutionary War. And guess what it had to do with? The money he was paid with, the colonial scrip, the continental scrip.
Yep.
And the new bank. And the Congress was getting ready to vote on whether or not to charter this new bank, which would have been the second one after the first one closed up, because of the fiat paper and the big argument that created. And wouldn't you know, it was the northern states that wanted to float all the paper and the southern states that were fighting against it. And here's this veteran who fought in the Revolutionary War in George Washington's command, who lost his home because he couldn't pay his property taxes, and what little money he had left that was in colonial script, he was now going to have to take a 35% cut in what its value was.
Ooh.
And he was going to be left destitute. And Washington was so moved and angered that he agreed to attend the convention because he knew we've got to do something.
Right.
And there's a great rundown in there also on Shay's Rebellion. And
wow.
Shay's Rebellion also revolved around the same issue. They were taxing the ever-living dog snot out of these guys, and they had nothing but this worthless paper money that was becoming more worthless by the day, and the governor of Massachusetts, who was not Mitt Romney at the time, his solution was to increase their property taxes on farm property.
Good God.
And not by a little bit, we're talking a 75% tax increase.
Oh, my God.
That's why they rebelled.
Wow. Jeez. Unbelievable. Isn't that what they're doing in France? 75%?
You know, I mean, they're darn sure doing it in Greece. And, of course, you know, if you listen to the news reports, it's because the Greeks don't pay their taxes. Be very careful about that, you know, guys. They're leading you up to the line that there's no enforcement mechanism in Greece to get these deadbeats to pay their taxes, and that's why Greece is in such bad shape. And you know what?
So says the bankers that are in political offices.
right. And so what you've got is the bankers who have doled out all these huge loans or debts to the state, complaining that the state isn't being progressive enough and forceful enough in forcing the underlings to pay the doggone debt.
Wow.
It's insanity. And this disease needs to die a slow and painful death. And we need to learn our lesson from the scriptures about solid, honest money, proper monetary policy. You know, God was real clear. Do not have unjust weights and measures, one great and one small.
Oh, and we got a lot of work to do.
We're just not practicing that. And that's why I've said from the first day I came on the air that unless and until we have the will and the fortitude to eliminate this monetary system in this country, all the elections in the world won't solve a doggone thing.
No, it's not going to change a damn thing. No, it's not. And Ron Paul knows that. Absolutely knows that. He's known it for how many years since he was old enough to think. He knows. It's just, you're right. I mean, we get it. But what do you do? I mean, we've got this huge machine against us in every aspect of our lives. They've taken over.
Well, they've only taken over what we've allowed them to control.
Yep.
I mean, plain and simple. And I'll go back. I'll go back to that book, and I'll go back to reading what Josephus yelled to his countrymen. He said, "Look, this is a test. This is a test, and you're failing. Will you cling so dearly to all the luxuries that you've come accustomed to with your servitude? Will you cling so tightly to that you just won't turn your back and walk away? You'll turn your back on God instead."
Exactly. Well, that's been going on for a long time, since the Garden of Eden, turning their backs on what he told them to do.
And we've got another caller on the line, a Skype caller. Who we got here?
Yeah, my name's Joe.
Joe.
Yep, that's me.
I believe you've been on my show before, Mr. Joe.
Yeah, I guess I have. So, the monetary policy you're talking about, how do you want to revamp it?
How do I want to revamp it? I want honest money. And I already know the response from all the naysayers, okay? But you know, this idea of elastic money is garbage, and it brings what we have now. It brings what Greece has. It brings what Europe has. And it's false production. It's false expansion.
Okay, so how do you want to prevent it?
How do you want to prevent it? It's real simple.
No, yeah, okay.
It's a one-for-one exchange. No bank can loan a dollar it does not have. No more trading on margins. I know all the stock traders out there will hate it. Too bad. You don't trade a stock you don't own. You don't run a margin account. It's honest money, one-for-one, across the board.
And the Fed.
No BS.
Well, how do the banks get the money?
Well, the banks would have to get the money from depositors, and they would be the banks would have to be liable for that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but who's going to create the money?
Congress can create the money.
Who?
Congress can create the money.
Okay. You're talking about the Treasury or somebody
else? Well, yeah. I mean, that's one way. That's one method, sure.
Okay.
We need to send Joe the YouTube with the little bears that explain to Bernanke.
Joe knows fully well. And he's putting forth a valid question. You know, how do you create the currency and how do you determine how much currency to create? That's always been the rub. And what do you back the currency with and all of those wonderful
yep.
questions.
Yeah, because it's not that simple. It is simple, but it's not that simple for people who don't really know. And it's nice to have honest money because that's what we should have. But is the Federal Reserve a viable institution or is it not? What are we going to do with it? What happens if we transfer the power? Okay, and then are you going to have a gold standard, silver standard, tobacco standard, no standard? Are you going to have competing currencies, a single currency? You know.
Well, you know, I think the best idea I've seen thus far is the one that Ron Paul put forth for a competing currency. Just simply allow a competing currency, a gold or silver currency, which we actually have now. The government just refuses to recognize it, even though it's in Title 31.
Well, I'm referring to the guy that got jailed for having the silver coins.
Oh, the Von Nauthaus? Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he did nothing illegal. They tried to say it was counterfeiting, and it wasn't anything of the sort. But, you know, he who has the gold makes the rules.
Yeah, that's true. But in the Constitution, you're only supposed to coin money. You're not supposed to have paper money.
That is correct.
You know, I'm not against paper money as long as it's done properly. And Ron did come out a few weeks ago about competing currencies versus the gold standard. I'd like to know how that's going to work because I'd like to know how a town in Idaho with their own currency, how they're going to trade with another town in Nebraska with their own currency.
Well, the only way they can is if they're using gold and silver. And that actually is in our Constitution. That's why it was placed in there that no state shall make anything but gold or silver legal tender in the payment of debt. So the states can coin their own money, provided that they're using gold and silver. They're not allowed to emit bills of credit. They're not allowed to print money. An ounce of gold is an ounce of gold, whether it's in California or New York. The problem comes in when they try to debase their currency by mixing it with other metals, but it's still only worth its gold content by weight.
You don't find that it might be a little bit confusing for people in various towns around the United States to try to decipher which gold piece is, or silver piece is going to be the right piece?
Oh, absolutely it would be confusing. But how long do you think it would take for that confusion to be cleared up and people to recognize
don't take any money from New York because it's not worth a tinker's dammer. It's worth half of a Georgia dollar.
Yeah.
The marketplace will sort that out, and I have full faith in the marketplace, more so than I do the government of any one state or all the states collectively.
Well, that I agree with. For the competing currency, yeah, it'd have to be sorted out. I guess it would probably be boiled down to one currency anyway. My question is with the gold standard I've always had, especially if it's going to be the coinage of money with gold or silver, where are they going to get the gold?
Well, we pretend like there's no gold out there, and I understand why people do that. But what we're doing when we ask that question is we're looking for a one-to-one trade valuation with the current inflated market. So what we're saying is, gee, there's not enough gold to cover all the inflation crap that they've created through the Federal Reserve. You know, there's not $60 quadrillion worth of gold out there, or $1 quadrillion to cover all the derivatives. Well, that's the problem, folks. That's it in a nutshell. By using funny money, monopoly money, and not having a steadfast standard. Even if you're using paper money, I don't care what the standard is, whether it's gold, silver, or paper. I got no issue there necessarily. The one thing with gold and silver is it keeps you honest to the quantity you have on hand, period. But nonetheless, you know, now we have to get down to, instead of an ounce, we're getting down to a grain of gold. See, what would happen when we let the lid off, and this is why they fight against the gold standard or a gold and silver standard, is that it would be so patently obvious how much they've gamed the system. Because a gallon of gas would cost you about 3 cents if you actually had enough gold, you know, to cover all the dollar bills that have been printed electronically and otherwise. So what we're talking about is a valuation or an exchange rate.
Mm.
And I say let the market work that out. And this is why we're seeing these problems in Greece. You look at what happened in Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at the banks and said, you know what? This isn't our debt. You guys created this crap out of thin air. You pay it. It's your damn junk.
Yeah.
And they walked away. And look at them now. They're doing great. And that's, you know, the Greeks. What the part they don't get is they want the bank to print more worthless paper because they want it still. They haven't quite figured it out.
Yeah, well, Iceland did a good job, but I still want to find out how much gold is enough and where are they going to get it. Remember, back in 1971, we had enough gold, but because the Gaul wanted to exchange the currency for the gold, Nixon said, nope, can't do it. Then we went off the gold standard.
Well, the problem there is they negotiated a piss-poor agreement with the gold standard and Bretton Woods to begin with. And where they went awry, if you go back and look at it historically, where they went awry is they put gold at a fixed value versus paper.
Hmm.
That they screwed the pooch. Because as the paper becomes inflated, you have a volume of paper that's vastly superior to the volume of gold, and the gold is being traded at a fixed rate of $39 an ounce. Even the market tells you that gold is $800 an ounce. That's insanity.
Yeah, but that answers the question about how inflation occurs. But if you have, let's say, there is gold in Fort Knox, but how do you have enough gold to take care of a population of 300 million?
Well, that comes down to pricing and valuation. When you talk about inflation, it depends on what you're talking about. Traditionally, inflation is an increase in the supply of money circulating within an economy. Now, if you're talking about increased prices, well, increased prices are they're a consequence of the increase in the money supply. They're not a cause of it. So again, we're still looking at the goal, we're looking at, okay, a cheeseburger costs $8. A number three at Hardee's with a large fry and a large drink costs you $7.98. We don't have enough gold in Fort Knox, in the world for that matter, to buy everyone in the U.S. a number three combo meal at Hardee's, but you're looking at current valuation mm-hmm. of $7.98 versus gold at $1,600 an ounce. Well, you're valuing the commodity that you want to use as money in the paper that you've created this massive mound of paper and electronic money. That's crazy. It's no better than what they did in Bretton Woods, and it would be destined to fail. You've got to let the market determine what the valuation is. If government tries to fix the value and say it's this much and that's all there is, you're never going to get out of the problem.
Are you saying to continue with the paper money or to transfer back over to the coinage of just metals?
Either one. Okay. If we went on a purely gold standard, next month,
mm-hmm.
and the government said, okay, gold is worth 2,000 paper dollars an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fail. It's an automatic fail. You cannot have the government dictating what a dollar will purchase, and that's exactly what they're doing, whether it's
right,
gold, silver, or otherwise.
That's where the problem lies.
Right, but I kind of think I see what he's saying. Okay, if you're not going to use paper currency and so on, are you going to use a coinage substitute? Because how are you going to put gold, physical gold, in the hands of X amount of billion people?
There you go.
Okay. Well, you have electronic credit and money. Presumably, even the homeless guys are getting some coinage on the street corner. How did you get the money in their hands to begin with? The marketplace puts the money in everyone's hands. That's how it gets traded. Now, how did we get to the point where
no,
we were searching
for the velocity? No, the marketplace just doesn't do it quite like that.
Well, I understand an oversimplified statement, but nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. It eventually got there through velocity, through the banks, through the fractional reserve, yeah. But what your panelists had said was a very succinct way of saying what I've been saying. How are you going to get the physical gold into the hands of 300 million people or 88
when
million
there
households?
Enough content. Right. Right. You've got more supply. You've got more demand than supply.
You sure
so
do.
At some point in time,
yeah,
there's not enough gold to cover everybody.
That's the whole thing.
Let's say I don't think there's enough money or enough gold above ground and in possession.
No, there hasn't been enough gold mined throughout the history of the world in order to cover $42 quadrillion, or the derivatives. But the derivatives I'm not concerned about. As a matter of fact, I'm asking because I don't really know the answer myself. And
right. Well, I understand the question, and I understand the problem that it presents, and you're absolutely correct. And there's no magic wand formula or solution. I think, and that's why I said I believe that Ron Paul's idea of issuing a competing currency.
Like a gold substitute, basically, an equivalent substitute.
Well, it wouldn't even have to be a gold substitute. The federal government today, right now, is minting gold and silver coins, and people are purchasing those gold and silver coins. Now, if those people, I've got a silver dollar, but I'll just make the analogy. I have a 2007 Silver Eagle, and
right.
It says it's worth $1. I've got a paper dollar bill, and it says it's worth $1. Well, now nobody with two brain cells is going to take that silver dollar and go get a dollar's worth of gas at the gas station with it.
Well,
clearly, there's
an experiment, and somebody showed up at, I think it was McDonald's, with a gold piece. And
yeah, they turned it down.
Yeah, they turned it down. So we're taking education, but again, the question goes back to this. Goes back to logistics. Maybe devaluation, well, I guess devaluation would have to come into play. the thing is, if we're either going to have a gold standard, which I don't particularly care for, it can be worked around by politicians, or if you're going to have gold or silver as the actual metal to put into the coinage process, then you're going to have to distribute these coins. First off, I don't think the coins will last maybe more than a few years because people aren't going to walk around in their pockets filled with, you know, gold coins. And, you know, and then you're going to have to try to make up a coin that's going to be worth $1,000 because people aren't going to walk around, you know, with heavy pockets. If you're going to pay for everything with currency, they might as well do it with credit cards. The thing is, my question is, where's the gold going to come from and how much gold is it going to take if this particular coinage system is going to be instituted? Personally, I don't think it ever will. I think people are too used to the paper money. And there have been nations that have been running properly, just like ours was at a long time ago and during the prior to Federal War, prior to the Revolution, where the script was perfectly fine. It can be managed, especially with computers nowadays. All this crap that we're going through now is because of corruption, Bernanke, Sumners and Geithner, et cetera, and Volcker and Greenspan. They've all debased the currency. But even you don't need a gold standard to actually have workable paper currency. But for people who say let's go back to the gold coins, it sounds good. But remember, back during the 13 colonies, there was only about 7 million people, so they had enough paper script and they had enough gold in order to make people feel satisfied with the currency back then. Today, So again, I don't know what the solution is. So that's why I'm asking.
I agree with you. I agree with you that logistically it is difficult. And I think that the one reason that everyone, of course, goes back to a gold and silver standard, number one, it's constitutional. And number two, it has the appearance of, you know, geez, it's the magic cure-all, end-all. I understand and I realize, Joe, and I agree with you, it's not.
Is gold mentioned in the Constitution?
What's that?
Is gold mentioned in the Constitution?
It is mentioned in the Constitution.
Okay. All right.
Silver, however, is actually our monetary standard.
Hmm.
And that's constitutional. And it's mentioned numerous times. The dollar, and it was well known and understood at the time that the dollar was a specific coin, and it was a Spanish silver coin. And what the founders did, they went out and they looked at what was circulating as money in the colonies. And they said, well, let's take a sampling. And they took a sampling, and what they found predominantly was people were using these Spanish silver coins.
Hmm.
They weren't using.
I don't want to bog down your show with a history lesson.
No, man, you're doing great. They weren't using, you know, the British pound sterling. Hardly anyone had that, and that was actually one of the things that pushed people over the edge was the Stamp Act,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that the colonists were told they could no longer pay their taxes with their colonial script or with Spanish dollars. They had to pay with the coin of the realm.
Mm.
Which was the British pound. Well, almost no one had any, so it was the valuation was all out of whack. So you know, you bring up a good point, and I think with what Ron Paul was speaking of, whether it's gold or silver or whatever it might be, for the government to allow a competing currency as long as it's regulated and there's honesty in the system, we're okay. It's
well,
the regulated.
I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so if silver, like an American Eagle silver coin, which one could buy from Amex or whatever, is worth $28 or $30 per ounce, right?
Correct.
For that coin. In today's market, if they were to accept it at the gas station, I could fill up my tank. Now,
that is correct.
Again, if
depending
you
on what kind of car you're driving.
If you had back in the 1800s a 1 ounce gold coin of gold, and you wanted to purchase a nice brand new suit, you could get a hell of a suit. And you know what? That same gold coin would buy you a beautiful one today. This is why Ron Golden was saying that that it stores its value. It never, you know what I mean?
Right.
It stores
the
regardless.
It's like gold.
It's like a ruby.
Okay. I know, but
now, the other question is what Joe was talking about. Okay, I have a dollar bill. Do you realize that for that dollar bill, if I need change for that dollar bill, I have increments of dimes and quarters and nickels and pennies. So why can't we have a gold coin, and if you want to use that, do the same thing with it. Make smaller little things to make change with.
No, you can't.
What's wrong with that?
Well, you can't.
Well,
the thing is, if you want to walk around with $500 in your pocket.
I don't care. I don't want to be ruled by these people anymore. I'm sick of it. I don't want
to. I can't say I blame you, but the only thing I'm talking about is...
Are you kidding me? I would carry one of those, like my mother's walker, if I had to. I don't
walker
care.
Walker, Joe. He's vicious. Linda, what Joe is saying is correct, and it's really, it's a logistics problem, okay? And, I mean, you know, honest to God, I don't know how many gold or silver coins you've toted around, but 12 one-ounce coins is a pound.
There you go.
So $12 in your pocket, you're walking around with a pound of money dragging your drawers around.
And
that's why
you're not
going to
be happy with that walker you're talking about. You'd be mighty tired very, very quickly.
Trust me, that's why somebody invented the wheels. You put it on.
Now, here's where the modern technology, I think, provides us an answer or a way around that problem. However, you would have to have laws in place that would punish by death anyone that violated that law. Otherwise, we're right back to the old goldsmith, and he's got more gold than he's got claims against it, and you know we're right back to square one.
Right.
You can put on deposit gold and silver coin, and it can be divided down to a molecular structure if you really want to get that minuscule about it. But I think that's an answer to the valuation issue.
Right.
Now, the way that I think that you get the coinage or into circulation is you allow people the choice to use the paper or the other. And
absolutely.
Let the market determine. So I get my paycheck and go to the bank, and instead of cashing it for paper bills, I say I want it in gold eagles and silver eagles and put it on my account. So there's real, you know, what they have to do is that you're going to have real backing. The golden have to, and I can still use my debit card, you see, but it's at current exchange rate based on the market price.
Well, there's a bank out of Germany doing that, actually, that I joined up for. I'm waiting to get my card. But apparently you can do I'm kind of experimenting on this because I'm investigating it. But what they're doing is allowing you to take your money and buy gold at today's market price, and the value of that gold, you know, is affected, obviously, by the market. So if your gold in your account that you purchased goes up in value, you obviously also get that profit attached to it.
Yeah, I've had that with Swiss
francs,
too. You're going to have to be careful about that you don't get cozine.
Right. That's exactly it. That's what I said. You've got to have laws in place that, you know, unlike the current system, and what led to our current system was that it fractionalized the money you had in your account. That's what
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to say it's corruption of the monetary system. Again, you can have fractional reserves, and there's no real problem with that, because as long as it's not a run on the bank, people have the real money for them to spend. So I'm not concerned about that. Just my personal opinion, okay?
I think for me, personally, the fractional reserve, to use a euphemism we've heard lately, is the gateway drug to corruption in banking.
But people don't explain it well. There isn't any real difference between a 10% fractional reserve or, let's say, 50%, which a lot of people would say, yeah, let's have that. At least we'll have the banks not lending out as much money. But then that'll mean that I'll lend out less money, and I still have to go to the Federal Reserve or the Treasury to get money to loan out to those people who want to borrow. So you still have to go through a borrowing system. So it doesn't matter how much you have on, in reserve. It only matters how much you're lending out. And if you're lending out enough to fill up the population and you don't have corruption, in my humble opinion, not a problem.
I agree with that. Have you seen, Joe, have you seen the I can't remember the guy's name now, People for a Mathematically Perfected Economy?
No, I haven't.
You should check that out, because the guy there really puts together a good argument and explains quite well the cyclical trap that our government is in, and consequently us because of it, you know, and it has to do with the supply of money, exactly what you're talking about with fractional reserve lending. And
well, supposed to be, there's supposed to be an 18-month lag between what the Federal Reserve loans out to what the effect is on the economy. That's in the textbooks. Maybe that's what he's talking about. If he's talking about something else, yeah, I'd be interested in that.
No, what he's talking about is something else. What he's talking about is the fact that, okay, the government takes in, you know, X amount of revenue, and it pays down the interest payment on the national debt.
Uh-huh.
But once it pays that out, they've contracted the money supply.
Oh, is this the argument where because and money is based on debt, the more that you pay down the debt, the more you're contracting the economy?
Well, it's true. You are pulling money out of circulation, and so they subsequently borrow again. It's a simplified.
Yeah, it's a cycle. That's the whole thing about the Federal Reserve. That's why even in its own structure, if you take a look at it on its own website, and you have to examine it, but it takes some examination because the way that they obfuscate their particular methodologies of doing things, it's you really have to investigate. But the thing is, even if you contract the monetary supply, sure, but you can always release more money into the economy again. But to pay down the national debt, look, if you got rid of the Federal Reserve, you wouldn't even have national debt. Because you wouldn't have an interest to pay back.
So fully,
I agree completely. And you know, and it's not even necessarily getting rid of the Federal Reserve. It's doing away with the current Federal Reserve system, the way it's set up, because they do provide a service with the clearinghouse and everything that's done through.
Well, the Treasury can do that, but see, with the Federal Reserve, everything is borrowed money. If the Treasury was in charge of the money, there would be no such thing as interest because there would be no such thing as borrowing.
Correct.
All they have to do is print up the money and distribute it, and that would be it.
Yeah.
That is absolutely correct.
Ron, are you live or in archive?
We've been in the archives, hon.
I thought so. Okay. I'm going to get off and go check out all my 100 emails and delete them before they put another virus in my computer. Thank you so much for taking my call. And
no problem.
Thanks for explaining the monetary system, because I'm trying to learn it, and I'm getting there. Stick figures works for me.
Stick figures?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm 101. Hello?
Joe has a very good grasp on it, so he's a very good person to listen to.
Okay,
for sure.
Guys. Well, God bless everybody, and have a great rest of Memorial Weekend.
All right.
Okay, you do the same.
Good night. Bye.
So the whole thing goes back to me is about the logistics of the gold. I'm not saying it can't work. I'm just saying I don't know how it works. So the competing currencies, I read something by Ron Paul about that. He doesn't describe it in detail. I guess maybe he does next time, or he doesn't want to get bogged down in it. But the thing is that, yeah, of course we need to revamp our monetary system. But corruption is at the core of this. If they got rid of everybody within the Federal Reserve and they just kept the Federal Reserve, the buildings and the infrastructure. Yeah, and they left that alone and they just transferred the ownership of the Federal Reserve over to the Treasury. And if the Treasury was not corrupt, it'd be no problem. See, you know, I don't buy this crap where they have a Federal Reserve, they have 150 PhDs working for them, and they don't know how to regulate the economy. These people ought to be in jail.
Well, I agree with you in that, Joe. And, you know, I think for expediency, is why people talk about a gold standard. And because the contrast is pretty demonstrable, it's pretty stark, it's easy to demonstrate at this point in time. Logistically, yeah, it's a nightmare, and it's going to take somebody a hell of a lot smarter than I am to figure out, you know, how you get that done.
Mm.
But I think, you know, yes, Congress prints the damn money into circulation rather than what we're doing now, which is Congress printing the money, selling it for cost, the cost of printing to the Fed, and then borrowing the shit back with interest. It's insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
cut out the middleman. Yeah. And, of course, it's, well, we owe the money to ourselves. Well, that's the most asinine thing I've ever heard.
I don't know, but I've tried to describe that to people. I don't know. They just don't get it.
Good. And, you know, the case that our $15 trillion national debt is actually our asset.
Yeah, on banking's balance sheets, I know. That killed me. Hey, is that $15 trillion? Is that $15 trillion, the budget deficit, is that for 1 year or is that spread out over 10 years?
Well, the $15 trillion, the national debt, is spread out, from what I can see, since 1913. It's never been paid down.
No, I'm not talking about the national. I'm talking about the budget deficit.
Oh, the budget. Oh, that's $1.6 trillion, and that's one.
That's 1 year then. Okay.
Spread out. No, that's 1 year. That's 1 year deficit. Right. 1 year shortfall.
All right, because I heard people say here Obama ran a $15 trillion deficit, and I'm asking myself, is that 10 years or is that 1 year?
No, he ran the national debt up to $15 trillion. He ran a $4.8 trillion deficit.
In 1 year?
In 3 years' time.
3 years?
He spent more money than all the presidents before it combined.
I know, and so did Bush. And that's amazing because Obama, you know, since prior to Bush, I mean prior to Obama was Bush. Bush would have to be included in those figures. And Bush ran up the debt and the deficit more than the other presidents combined, too.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah,
yeah, and Obama topped him. And to me, that just gives you insight into how bad our situation is monetarily if we continue playing this Federal Reserve game.
Yeah, but people don't feel the pain yet, even though we've been growing at 10% inflation, in my estimation, for the last 7 years. When you take a look at the
you know why they're not feeling it is because we got all this cheap shit we can import from China. You wait till China buckles up, and we're going to... People will feel it in earnest.
Yeah, they will. But then, who knows, it might be too late. That's the way the American people are. But does anybody have any question or any answer to my question about the logistics? Because I'd like to find out the answer.
Man, you know, I really don't know. I think the answer is...
All right. So,
I think the answer is probably a combination of things. I don't think there's a singular answer.
Yeah, well, it's going to be complicated, to be sure. Competing currencies, along with the coinage of metals by the Treasury, if that's going to be that's probably will take priority. Anyway,
well,
it's a good huh?
Well, that and people depending on the people in position, because you know, like them brilliant people that you know. Or in our Congress and government that go and stick somebody like, you know, the CEO from JPMorgan Chase and the, you know, regulation committee that's supposed to be, you know, regulating Wall Street.
Yeah, those real geniuses. You know what I found out the other day? That the guy investigating the trading losses of $3 billion by JPMorgan, the head of the banking committee, guess who's his staff director?
Jamie Dimon.
but close. a former lobbyist for J.P. Morgan.
Well, of course.
People get these positions? It's crazy. You don't...
They're thick as thieves. They all run in the same circles. Look, I think the first step... This is my humble opinion, is it's time for the PhDs to stand up and profess Keynesian economics doesn't fucking work.
Yeah. You know, I have
right.
a friend of mine.
Even when there was a big video out on YouTube for a while with Ron Paul, like busting some chops and you know on the Hill with Bernanke and all them guys, and his question was, whose brilliant idea was it to take a banker and stick them in control of the regulating position or in charge, of the head of the board that regulates the banks and Wall Street? Where did that come from? I'd like to know. And they danced around that question. He asked it about 6-7 different times with different people. And they all danced around that. They didn't want to give a name and who put that, you know. So apparently there was more. Because then he goes, and my question is, how many more bankers are in the position on the board?
And well, take a look at Paulson when he was Secretary of the Treasury. Where did he come from? Goldman Sachs.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Who was the person that
That's
asked
why,
for
well,
the...
Well, yeah, because he got that because... and also when he got that, you know, when he made, was it $6 billion he made? And he would have paid, had to have paid a $6 million tax, or a $50 million tax bill on that or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And because he got invited to go into that political position, that gave him the tax break. So he managed to avoid paying a $50 million tax bill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the people in Congress, they don't consider it insider trading technically. But if they're around to write the laws that benefit one company,
yeah.
then it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yep.
So,
and I ain't got nobody giving me an out on my tax bill. I got news for you.
Well, isn't that the truth, preach, huh? I'm paying 33%. You know, before I even see my check. So. You know,
well, that's payroll tax, yeah.
You know, that's, you know, I hear the word anymore and I just want to hit people. So, but anyway, what are you going to do?
Well,
that's why I took the job I did. So I might be paying in a huge amount of tax and property taxes and everything else, and they're sticking it to us. But when I'm sleeping and I come up with ideas like to stick it to the banks by their own, you know, by using the Constitution to beat them. For Pete's sake, you know, I kind of feel like I'm getting my money back.
You know, there's an organization that's just been formed that I hopefully will become a viable organization. It's called COP. I forget what the acronym stands for, but what they're going to do is go out and talk to individual cops and try to get them schooled on the Constitution. Now, I hope that actually does take off. What do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, that's Sheriff Mack is doing that, isn't he?
No, he's doing something else. Oh, he might be part of it, I don't know. But he's part of the Oath Keepers, and he's part of the convention of the 100 sheriffs that
right.
showed up in Las Vegas.
Right, but I know he's been working real hard to get, you know, sheriffs throughout the country educated in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And that's something we sorely need, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, this is different from the Oath Keepers. This is about people who aren't cops who are going to go out to other to cops, and they're going to ask them if they can talk to them, you know, for a minute or two, and show them various laws, statutes, constitutional clauses, and you know, and be nice and friendly about it, and just try to educate them on the Constitution or laws which are being, you know, torn asunder. So, it's just started, so I wish them the best of luck, because, you know, everybody's always asking, you know, like myself, what are we going to do? I personally think America's going to rot, but I hope somebody proves me wrong, and that different organizations do pop up and somehow can educate the masses before the actual thing does bite them in the ass. But I'm a pessimist, because I think 2012 is it. I think the year of the collapse is here. And I think it'll take place before the year is out, probably as some sort of October surprise. If I'm wrong, thank God.
Well, I agree with you. I don't know if I agree, you know, totally on 2012, but I think we're damn sure knocking on the door of it. And I don't know, man. You know, people are getting lulled to sleep because it amazes me that in spite of everything that's been done, that should have absolutely, utterly destroyed our economy, it's still showing resiliency in spite of all the ignorance. You know, it's crazy.
Well, they haven't unleashed the money yet. They've been printing money like crazy, but a lot of it's gone overseas, and there's a lot of reserves that haven't, that the banks have. If the banks start lending out those reserves, which de facto are being paid by the Federal Reserve to keep those reserves in within the bank, then you're going to have an unleashing of money. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, the money is being practically unleashed now. I mean, everybody can get a loan. You can't give a loan to everybody. If you give a loan to everybody, then everybody's got money, and then they're going to invest it unwisely. They're going to buy shit unwisely, and that'll.
Well, that's yeah, and that's what started this whole friggin' mess to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that you know, Ron Paul talks about is the malinvestment.
Mm-hmm.
When the money's flowing like wine, everybody's a damn stock trader and a wannabe millionaire.
Yeah, I know. That's what you were thinking of when you wanted to eliminate margin calls, right?
Well, you know, that's just it. I mean, we've got to get back to something honest and decent. And I understand the fractional reserve, and I know it does serve a purpose as far as allowing, you know, capital mm-hmm. and production to meet. To come together, idle capital, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I get the whole concept. But I think we've taken it so far the extreme the other direction. I don't know. I personally think the whole thing's just going to have to collapse and go to hell in a handbasket before anybody gets their head out of their butts. And by then it's too late. And then
yeah.
God only knows what's going to be foisted on us at that point. But, you know.
Well, that'll be martial law, my guess.
You know, like Bernanke and Ron Paul trading jabs in the committee hearings, and Ron Paul asking him about gold.
Hmm.
Well, they don't like gold, and the reason they don't like it is because whether they want to admit it or not, all of this shit is still being evaluated, at least in part, against gold. Say, well, you know, you look at the value of a dollar. Well, what's the value of a dollar? How are you measuring it?
Hmm.
Well, you're measuring it in commodities, whether it's corn or wheat or gold or silver or crude oil. So, I mean, you know, whether they like it or not, gold's still a player. And I think, you know, the commodities haven't gone down in their importance to us. You know, water is still pretty friggin' important.
Oh, yeah, well, the commodity. Yeah, the commodities.
So,
to me, gold and silver don't play a part for me. But hopefully they'll play a part in the economy. But the other commodities like... corn, wheat, oil, they're important. I think oil may be headed towards becoming the new currency or the new backing of the currency, which would be...
Well, hell, it's been the backing of the currency since 71 with Nixon.
Right, yeah.
The petrodollar, the oil has been what has been propping up our dollar. It is our currency.
Yeah, that's what that's why the you know other countries were using the American dollar as a world currency to purchase oil in between other continents. So as soon as that goes, there goes the dollar.
That's why we've had such a fuss with Libya, Iraq, Iran, Venezuela, because those are oil producing countries.
Wasn't it Libya that just made the
playing the dollar game? They're tired of playing the dollar game.
Right.
Well, the dollar is still the world.
They have to buy the dollar with their currency to purchase oil from whoever.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one major thing that's been holding the value to our dollar up was because of that. Now, with Iran, was it Libya? Who was it, Ron, that just used gold to purchase oil? Libya?
India. $12.5 billion.
Yeah.
From Iran, so that's a double thumb in their nose. And
right.
if you look at what I mean, why do you think China and India and these other countries are buying gold? And what do you suppose they're buying that gold with? They're using their dollar holdings to get some value out of their holdings, and they're fucking buying gold like crazy. They see the writing on the wall, and the BRIC countries want to crush the dollar. They don't want to do it overnight. They'd be cutting off their nose to spite their own faces. I mean, face it, if you're holding $3 trillion worth of dollars, right, you want to get a little bang for your buck before you cut off the spigot.
Yeah, well, that was the biggest joke played on not just us, but on China, in my opinion. They're holding about 1.5, no, a little bit over 2 trillion, I believe. And I think Japan holds more than they do. And do you know who holds more than China as well? Federal Reserve.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the part of we owe it to ourselves. That's
yeah.
where that comes from. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's interesting. Why is it when Japan got hit with the tsunami, why did Japan not cash in its treasuries, its U.S. treasuries? It has always done so in the past. Anytime they've come under financial hardship, they cash in a bunch of their treasuries. They didn't do it this time around. I think the reason they didn't do it is because the Federal Reserve gave them a loan.
Well, they probably did, and they probably did it surreptitiously. Another thing, too, if the Bank of Japan was to do that, that would be admitting to the Japanese people that Fukushima is really worse than they've been told. And I've also read that they may be thinking of doing that anyway, because Japan is turning into one huge sandlot, you know, with a lot of glowing sand at night.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be living over there.
No, unfortunately, an acquaintance of mine has some family over there, and they're living on the islands. They're not living on Japan proper. So, but they're still living within a few hundred miles. And I said, you know, you should tell your son and his wife to get the fuck out of there. they want to live there.
Hopefully they're taking lots of potassium.
I doubt it. Radiation is a good analogy for the awareness of people in general. Radiation will kill you, but since you don't see it killing you, you allow it to kill you. The American people don't know about economics. They think inflation is natural. So when they go to the supermarkets one of these days and they get a sticker price, not on a car, but on some meat, then maybe they might wake up a little bit. And then if the shelves start flying because of some sort of man-made disaster, then people realize, holy shit, not only do I not have enough money to buy meat, there's no meat. And, you know, that's when America will say, oh, help me. And then the government will come in and say, look, we've got terrorists around the corner. In order for, in order for us to protect you against them, we have to issue some martial law. Thank you, Jesus. You know,
Well, see, and what I see is a scenario, and I talked to Bob Chapman about this over a year ago.
Oh, I got to talk to him. I got to talk. He's on, you know, he's on Blog Talk Radio every Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, on Freedomizer, isn't he?
No, he's on Marines Disquisition.
Okay. Well, I know he comes on a Proof Negative show on Freedomizer once a month.
Oh, yeah? I got to talk to him. You know what? Not to interrupt, but I want to ask him, how come, I remember one time he said on Alex Jones that the police were after him. He's been hiding out from the police for, I don't know, a few years anyway. And he's been on the Blog Talk Radio show every Thursday, and he calls up Alex Jones every Friday. And I like to ask him, well, if you've been hiding out all this long, why haven't the fuck found you yet? Even if you're using some sort of, not encryption, but some sort of relaying device, they would have found you by now. I mean, how, you know?
You would certainly think so. And you know, I'm not gonna cast stones, okay? Mm-hmm. I called in. He was on Proof's show, and I called in and I said, well, you know, I got a good friend who's you know, a friend of a friend of a friend who's got somebody on the inside kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the scenario that was laid out to me, and it seems plausible and it seems to make sense, is that, you know, when we see the European Union pretty much fall apart, the EU, the mm-hmm. currency union, Greece going south and a bunch of contagion going on, and they're going to go nuts. They're already going nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we have a collapse in the U.S. and China, that you're going to see all of the nations come together. They're going to have this big powwow, and they're going to say, you know what, guys, what we really need to do is we need to hit the reset button.
Mm-hmm.
Going to have a revaluation. global revaluation of currency. And we're going to have some kind of standard where, you know, whereby all the currencies are measured off of one standard. And it ain't going to be the dollar.
No, it'll be some sort of SDR. Yeah, it'll be gold-backed.
And he says, well, you know, that he said, that's pretty plausible. And then the next week I hear him on his show, and he's saying, well, you know, I think they're going to, and he gave out the whole scenario. I'm like, you son of a. Yes. Yeah. Really? That was your idea. You came up with that, did you? I'm like, dang it. So, yeah, they lost a little credibility with me over that.
I don't know if Bob's a good man or not. I just want to find out how come a guy that's been hiding away from the cops all this long, how come they haven't found him when they know where he is every Thursday before? You know, they can't trace his phone calls.
Yeah, evidently he's in Singapore or something, you know, like they're not going to find you there. I mean, yeah.
And I'd like to find out more of that history, because I don't really know that much about it. I just know that he said that I think his father or his uncle was part of the mafia. He was hiding out from the cops for some reason, been hiding out for about 10 years, and he has to call in to Alex Jones's show. They can't call him because he won't give them their number. So
right.
in order for him to remain private. So I'm assuming he does the same thing with the Marines Disquisition show. So if he's, unless he's got some sort of high-tech device that you see in these movies, that he can detect when people are tracing him and he can, you know, veer their signals to some other false point.
He's using a prepaid cell phone from Walmart.
Yeah, maybe, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, right.
But I like to find out why. Plus, I can prove that, what's his name? Lindsay Williams. If I ever get him on the phone again, if I have time to really talk to him, I can prove that asshole's a fraud.
Yeah? How so?
You got to read the book, The Energy Non-Crisis.
Peak Oil, Energy, the Non-Crisis, right? Yeah.
Have you ever read it?
Yes.
You have read it. Good.
Yes.
All right. Now, who does he blame for what was going on back then?
Oh, criminy. Well, according to what I recall from the book, it was, you know, the orders came down from Washington that they couldn't talk about the oil discovery in Gull Island.
Right. So Washington, exactly. Washington was the culprit. Washington, they were the people who were restraining the oil companies from actually drilling on Gull Island and the other reserves. And the whole book was about how the government was at fault. And he even says in his book, and I had the book in front of me, if I ever got the chance to get on the air again, but my phone didn't get picked up, was to make a couple of quotes from the book where he actually says, and I'm paraphrasing, that the oil companies are not the villains in this. So if the oil companies are not the villains, and I asked him one time on a show, did you know at the time that these people were the New World Order? He says, yeah, even though they weren't called the New World Order at that time. Then how come he's telling people now that the people back then, the same people, okay, including his infamous, mysterious, anonymous Mr. X, if these people were the New World Order and the reason why we're in the scenario that we're in today, then how come his whole book back then was to exculpate them? Okay.
Well, I'll have to go back and read through it again. I've got it at home, and I've got it on DVD also. But I again, not trying to defend him at all, but it seemed to me that he was saying that these people were the elite, and that when he was out at the wellhead with whoever the head engineer or whatever was,
mm-hmm.
he got the phone call. And you know, said we can't talk about it, and that they called him into a meeting. Now, he said they told him he got the call from Washington.
He brought Senator Chance out there. I mean, and Senator Chance was talking with the head of Atlantic Richfield, who's his other so-called anonymous source that he hasn't revealed yet, but that's who it is. it was Mr. X.
Squiggy Fromm.
Huh?
Squiggy Fromm, wasn't it?
Yeah, Fromm. And Squeaky from? You mean from Charles Manson?
Anyway.
But he says, and you're right, he said Washington, they were the culprits. They were the ones who wanted to nationalize eventually the oil companies, and they were the ones who wanted to put the kibosh on drilling in order to drive up the prices. Now he's saying that the elite, he doesn't mention the government at all. He mentions that the people that he lived with, the same people who were innocent back then, are now the people responsible for what's going on today. So he's saying one thing, and then he's saying
right.
So that's broad.
Well, like I said, I'll have to go back and revisit the book because I never got the sense that he was trying to lay all the blame on the government. I got the sense that the powers that be told the government basically this is the deal, and you're going to play our game.
Maybe an extrapolation of what he wants people to believe now, but not back then. As a matter of fact, let me get the book, and I'll go to the chapter. So instead of paraphrasing, I'll just quote directly from the book. And let me get to it. Okay, here we go. And if I remember the keyword. Here we go, Bob.
Hey, guys, I got to run. I just realized what time it was.
All right, Brian. Yeah.
You guys have a good time. And I'll
take it easy.
Yeah, but stuff later. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Be good, Brian.
All right, here it is. Senator Chance had another question. Mr. X, if you're convinced that the federal government is out to nationalize the oil companies, undoubtedly you have a target date. Mr. X said, yes, Senator, we do. As oil companies, we have already calculated that with present government controls and regulations, we as oil companies can remain solvent until 1982. These were Mr. X's exact words. Let me see if I can skip down to even more relevant material. Because I know there's something in here that just sums it up really, really well about how the government wants to do it. Anyway, when you read the books in chapter, I think it's in chapter 4. Yeah, it's in chapter 4. And let me go past that. Let me search for this. Let's see if I get it. Canada has already nationalized its oil companies. The oil company officials in the top echelons have suggested that the federal government wishes to nationalize the oil chapters of America. We will elaborate on this in detail in a later chapter of the book. Here we go. One reason was that there was a concerted effort to ruin the oil companies, bring them to bankruptcy, discredit them in the eyes of the people, and ultimately nationalize the oil industry. This became even clearer as the rich oil men from Saudi Arabia, as well as the bankers from the lower 48 states, began coming to Prudhoe Bay in large numbers. So that was their whole... That was his whole shtick, was that the government, their plan was to nationalize the oil companies, blame the oil companies, keep the oil companies from producing oil. Therefore, if lack of supply means higher demand, then they would have to nationalize the companies and take over the oil companies. So this is his whole shtick.
I hear what you're saying, but if you go back and read that thing that you read just before the last one. He said someone told the government that the plan was to nationalize the oil fields, but that's what they wanted to happen.
And that's not what I read in the book, but here's chapter 14, the plan to nationalize the oil companies. So what you're saying is that from your extrapolation, you believe that somebody told the government to act as the bad guys, and the people who told the government.
That is exactly correct. And I'll tell you what, I would not hold out in light of, you know, the most recent happenings in the oil industry, you know, 2-3 months ago. I had people on my show calling in talking about how the speculators run up the price of oil. And I said, well, why don't you explain to me that process? Because all the speculators are doing is purchasing contracts that are for sale. You know, I mean, they don't just materialize out of nowhere. These contracts are offered up for sale, and they either buy them or they don't. And they're not going to buy them. They're not going to put their ass in the wind for, you know, $10 billion worth of oil contracts if the price is too high and they think it's going to go down. And now that oil's trading at $92 a barrel, I said the other night on my show, oh, where's everyone bitching about the speculators driving down the price of oil? But my point is this, you know, with this whole movement of drill here, drill now, we drill our own oil resources. If you understand the marketplace and how the marketplace works, you realize that it doesn't really matter where the friggin' oil comes from, okay, as far as the cost of oil. Yeah, it'll create jobs, and it's creating jobs up in Nebraska and the Bakken. But how do you produce oil here in the United States and sell it into the U.S. market at a lower price than the world market price for oil? There's only one way I know of to do that, and that would be for the government to nationalize the oil field, and people would go nuts. But if you get the gas price high enough, they'll be ready for it. They'll be willing for it. So I think that's still a distinct possibility.
Yeah, but it's to me, it's the bankers. It's the bankers, the government, and the oil companies. This is my conclusion. Are in bed together. And I think the bankers are the ones that are running everything, because without money, you can't have oil.
You got it.
And without oil, you really can't have an economy either, because without oil, you don't have the basis to manufacture the goods that make the economy run. So
if you simply look at the transition and how it was that we transitioned from a gold economy, mm-hmm. okay, to an oil economy, and just look at the time frame and look at who's involved and what happened. And I think that the cards tell the whole story. You know, we collapse the banking system. We pull all the gold in from private ownership. Oil is booming. You have World War II. At the end of World War II, you've got this Bretton Woods Agreement that fixes a gold standard between nations at $39 an ounce. And then in 71, you've got the collapse of Bretton Woods and the beginning of the petrodollar standard. And that's how the U.S. has been able to maintain its oligarchy, hegemony, whatever the hell you want to call it, over the global marketplace. And that's why when all this crap hit the economy or the banking sector, it didn't hit just the U.S. It was global.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had exported all this trash to all these other banking institutions. And what is it they're pushing right now, hard, fast, and furious, is this friggin' Agenda 21 cap-and-trade carbon credit scheme of garbage. And what they're trying to do is to get us off of the oil standard and get us onto another standard. And that's going to necessarily, I think, require a monetary collapse globally.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's their plan.
They can't control oil as easily as they can control how much you exhale.
Or dirt, yeah, on a farm.
I'm gonna get out of here and get in the hot tub before I go lay in this European style bed. We're down in Florida, and this bed has no box springs. It's a mattress on top of wood slats. It's like sleeping on the friggin' floor.
Why don't you get yourself a water bed?
Well, I've got a great bed at home. I'm on vacation right now. It's just the house we're staying in the beds aren't the best.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate you calling in, man. It's always a great conversation when you call in, Joe.
Yeah, thanks. All right. Oh, good luck to you. Enjoy your vacation.
All right, man. God bless. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.